On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, all the beautiful baseball that happened over the weekend. Four sweeps. Jeebus creebus, that's a lot. We'll go through all of those. Talk about Dodgers rotation questions. Talk about all the closers that can't get saves. Talk about Gino Suarez going yard four times, and then we'll throw it in turbo mode, figure out what a six-game sweep is called, and then announce our new favorite hockey team. All that and not much more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks four home runs, that's too many. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and is going yard quattro a me guy move? Many are saying it.
All I know is that hitting four home runs in a game equals a loss. At least that is what the recent evidence tells me. We are going to talk about the great performance from Gino Suarez in the desert, which resulted in a fat L for the Snakes. That and so much more on this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Oh my gosh, we got one, two, three, four sweeps to discuss. A couple other series we are going to highlight. The Tigers, of course, won again. The Orioles lost again. And then, we got a lot of it. Come on, it's Monday morning. I'm excited to talk about all the baseball that we watched this weekend.
We will, on this episode, once and for all, decide what a six-game sweep is.
Oh, yes.
We got some phenomenal emails from you folks, and also a hockey-related announcement. Yes. And, yes, the words Shador Sanders will be said on this podcast in a baseball context. But we must begin, as 8 Mile did, in Detroit.
Mm. How sweep it
and
is.
Also where it ended and where the entire movie took place.
Yes, indeed. All right, we have four sweeps to discuss on this podcast, and we are going to begin with those Tigers. I know the Pistons had a heartbreaking loss over the weekend, but fear not, as these gritty Tigers now might just be good. They're just good Tigers, as the Tigers comfortably handle all three games against the lowly Baltimore Orioles. That is really the best way to describe them right now. But let's keep our focus on Detroit right now. Friday, the game was rained out, so we get a doubleheader on Saturday, and that was Tigers were chilling. We got Casey Mize, looks great. They got multiple number one overall picks looking quite good as Casey Mize pitches well. Torque hits his eighth homer. Tigers kind of hang on late. Game two, we got the classic Cater Montero, Brant Herder, Wombo combo, which it worked for them so well last year and continues to work for them in 2025, and that recipe was way more delicious than Charlie Morton, who continues to struggle. They attempted to give him an opener to maybe help him ease into the game. That did not really result in any better results. That was bad English, but it was also bad pitching, as Charlie Morton falls to 0-6 on the season, and the Tigers win 6-2. And then on Sunday, all right, Orioles facing a sweep. Bad news. You got to face Derek Skubal. He strikes out 11 over six scoreless innings. Javi Baez reaches base three times. That tells you even more about how the Orioles pitching is going. Javi is hitting 300 right now, and he is the Tigers' everyday center fielder. That's really how you know how everything is going well for Detroit. Meanwhile, the Orioles continue to stink and have, I believe, the third or fourth worst record in baseball.
The Tigers, meanwhile, have the highest run differential. At least they are tied with the New York Yankees at plus 42. The Cincinnati Reds are at plus 41, which doesn't compute.
Well, it's related to what we're talking about, which is that
they
beat
the
Orioles
last again.
No, they beat the Orioles 24-2. So, still Reds. We're going to talk about you in a second. You swept the Rockies. Plus, even if you get rid of that, a plus 20 run differential is still pretty solid, right? I mean, the Reds are solid, but that's why that's inflated.
Entering the season, the Tigers and Orioles had nearly identical playoff odds on Fangraphs. The Orioles were at 46 and the Tigers were at 45. That is percent chance to make the playoffs. In the time since, they are the two biggest movers in either direction. Now, I did this before yesterday's game, to be clear. But the Orioles have had the biggest drop in terms of their playoff odds, and the Tigers have had the biggest rise. The Tigers now are at 77%. That is plus 31. The Orioles are now at 17%. That is minus 27. And this series was a beautiful microcosm as to why. The Orioles, for most of the season, have struggled because they can't pitch. This was different. This was more because they couldn't hit at all. Meanwhile, the Tigers are just purring, sucking up value all over the field. They have this rotating cast of players that AJ Hinch pulls in from the bench, and they all play like three positions, and everybody understands their role, and they take extra bases. And the difference, and there was a moment, it was like Javi Baez went from second to third on a deep fly ball to right. It was like a good read, extra base, ends up scoring. I think it was on the Saturday game, maybe the Sunday game. And it was like, oh, well, Javi Baez looks bought into the bit now. And it was clear that last year, now part of this is because Javi Baez was injured when the Tigers were making that run. He was not a character in the story, which if I told you that when he signed, like, hey, the Tigers are going to make the playoffs in 2024 and Javi Baez, you will not see him at the baseball stadium at all, right? You would have been like, what? He's in now. And how good is he? He's fine. Like, he's not going to be an all-star. It's bizarre that he's playing center field, which is due to some injuries the Tigers have had. But he is a competent hitter. He is not an enormous loss. And that is an enormous win.
Yeah. And I mean, right, is it like, is it more surprising if you had told you, you know, when he signed, oh, he's you literally won't see him, or he'll be the everyday center fielder batting ninth. Like, both of those outcomes are pretty amusing, but good for him. I'm happy for him. We wondered coming into the season, like, where is he going to fit on this team? And a combination of injuries and the way that he's played has given him a role. I think what's so interesting about the Tigers team, as we've continued to talk about them, is like, you know, you look at their stats offensively and they're like, okay, yeah, they're top half of the league, you know, as far as team OPS and, you know, runs scored, but they're still one of a few teams that is yet to score 10 runs in a game. You know, you still look at this lineup and you're like, okay, like, who am I actually scared about? Zach McKinstry's batting third. All right. I know he's having a good season. Like, Riley Green has not really gotten going, still striking out. We know it's still not a lineup that looks like one of the best teams in baseball. But when your pitching is this good, it doesn't really matter that much.
They don't bang.
They don't.
This team does not bang.
They simply don't. Yeah.
They don't bang. We should have a conversation maybe on Wednesday, which teams bang, who bangs, like how many of the 30 teams bang. Because the Tigers don't bang. They score runs.
Yeah.
But they don't really bang.
They score
on this team. Who on this team bangs, right? I would say Torque is banging.
Yep.
It's real. He's kept it rolling. I would say Zach McKinstry is currently banging. He's like 100th percentile sweet spot launch angle, which is,
okay, sure.
I will now translate that, which is there is an optimal angle at which to hit the baseball so that it is not a fly out or a ground ball. And even if you are not hitting it that hard, if you are consistently hitting the ball at a good launch angle, it will usually result in hits. He is tops in baseball, number one, in terms of hitting the ball and meeting it with a good bat path. He's tops. Now, how sustainable is that? I don't know, but he's currently playing like an all-star. We need to start calling him Z-Mac Cash. That is a layup and a half. Dylan Dingler is pretty awesome. He has yet to walk this season, which is great. But he's good on both sides of the ball, and this Tigers team kind of slaps, man.
Yeah.
They don't bang, though.
They don't bang. And by the way, yeah, Dylan Dingler up to 74 plate appearances without a walk. So I don't know if the Tigers are going to celebrate that in the way that we did for Jacob Wilson. But the point is he's still hitting .288, and he's a catcher, which is pretty cool. I assume, you know, getting it. By the way, that also speaks a lot to the whole Tigers pitching operation, because one of the things that I understood to be one of the most important things about the Tigers' run prevention apparatus last year was Jake Rogers. And this isn't to take anything away from Jake Rogers, who I think is an awesome defender and an awesome leader and all those things. And I'm sure the Tigers want to have him back soon. But the fact that they've able to basically slot in who is, I think Dylan Dingler is still, okay, he's not technically rookie eligible anymore, but he's barely played in the big leagues. And the fact that you can slot him and I guess Tomas Nito in as the catchers and to just keep on getting outs the way that they have with a lot of the same guys that we've seen last year. But then also you bring back a Flaherty who was not there in the second half. Tommy Kahnle has been fantastic. And I mean, you look at some of those relievers that start in the postseason. Will Vest was the one who took the biggest leap in October. Even from what he was doing in the regular season. And that has fully carried over. He looks like one of the best relievers in baseball. He's been even more dominant than, you know, a Tyler Holton or some of these other guys. You know, Bo Brisky and Jason Foley have really kind of fallen out of the mix. I think Foley's just been hurt, so he's not even really been part of this. But Bo Brisky's got a 9 ERA. So not all these guys are doing what they were doing last October, but enough of them are. And the rotation's obviously much better to where it's, you know, one of the best pitching staffs in baseball.
Last thought, and then we will move on from the Tigers. Let's talk about G-Mac Cash.
Yeah.
G-Mac Cash, one of our favorite characters in the extended baseball universe. If you listen to the show, you know who he is, but we'll explain it again. Detroit-based hip-hop artist, all-time YouTube follow, like and subscribe. He's just releasing incredible Detroit-specific music, that most of which does not relate to us because we're not from there. But his song, Tigers Won Again, which has siblings in Pistons Won Again and Lions Won Again. But Tigers Won Again, every time the Tigers win again, Jordan and I will text one another.
Tigers win again. They won again and they keep winning. But I think what is important to monitor here is, you know, the Pistons are in the postseason right now. They call it the playoffs season. Basketball. Sorry, they're in the playoffs. And the Pistons won again, which I believe was produced after Tigers Won Again and after Lions Won Again.
Yeah.
Again, a bit of a Detroit sports renaissance, which is part now. Is that related? Is it all because of G-Man Cash? Probably. But
probably.
The difference is that as good as Tigers Won Again is, there are no references to any players on the team. Whereas Pistons Won Again, he references Cade Cunningham. He references Jalen Duren and Jaden Ivey, right? So that's really the next level. We need the Tigers to be, you know, clearly the best team in the American League, on the way to the postseason, like division champs, right? You know, last year they made the postseason, they made this run. But if they can elevate to where we get another edition of Tigers Won Again, to where he's shouting out Z-Mac Cash, right? Zach McKinstry, where he's shouting out Will Vest and Javi Baez playing center. Like, that's really what I want. Now, I have no idea, again, how much G-Mac Cash is watching the Tigers, who knows? But for someone who I trust him to respond to whatever is going on. And if the Tigers have indeed elevated, I think he will make more music. And I'm optimistic that it could involve some name drops. Scooble, at least.
Tarek Scooble. Scooble.
Yeah. At least
Scooble with the Scrooble. You know, that's anyway. Z-Mac Cash.
Yeah.
Zach McKinstry is officially Z-Mac Cash. If that's already been done by any smarter Tigers person, I apologize. But that just feels like a layup. Where do the Tigers go this week so they can win again?
Where do they go this week? I don't know. Oh,
so that was
they go
a
to
question.
Houston. They got a nice little three-city road trip.
Ooh.
Astros, Angels, Rockies.
Sounds like some
sounds like
again.
They will be winning again and again and again. So we will keep an eye on that. As for the Orioles, you're going to see them a little bit this week, it sounds like. So
yeah, I'm as soon as we finish this podcast, I will be getting in the 2011 Toyota Prius and driving down I-95.
Great.
For a little Orioles Yankees.
So there are some larger Orioles conversations that we should probably be having. Let's keep the positive vibes rolling and push that to later this week. Let's move on to another sweep. Let's go out west. Ooh, this is an interesting result. One of the big themes early in the season was that the Padres cannot be defeated at home. Petco perfection, we called it.
You know, the Padres lost again.
Yeah, not the case this weekend. As the Tampa Bay Rays, my Tampa Bay Rays, I'm riding with this team. I picked them to make the postseason. And even though the record hasn't been awesome early on, I said, you know what? I think this team's all right. They sweep the Padres in San Diego. in what was a really just a pitching masterclass from the Rays, Rays staff. We got Shane Baz, 7 scoreless on Friday. We got Ryan Pepio, 6 strong on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Zach Littell, who has not been awesome to start this season, gets his first win of the year, and the bullpen shuts it down. The big takeaway here from this, like this is, I guess, the recipe for Rays success. We know their offense isn't necessarily going to wow people, although they've certainly had some fun contributions from Jonathan Aranda and Cameron Meisner, and Caminero has had some big swings. And Chandler Simpson's making a difference, man. He robbed Manny Machado of a home run in center. He's of course stealing bases. He is reaching base. He got a hit against Robert Suarez. I believe he drove in a run against Robert Suarez, which is very impressive. So, you know, some things are going well for Tampa. This was more of a kind of an eye-opening result for the Padres, where it's like, oh, right, like they're running out half a roster that is simply not of major league quality right now.
I'm going to explain what happened in one sentence. The player on the active 26-man healthy roster with the second highest OPS behind only Fernando Tatis Jr. is
Gavin Sheets.
Tyler Wade.
Oh, yikes.
That's it. That's the whole thing, right? Fernando's amazing. We know this. Machado is fine right now. Cronenworth, who was good to start the year, hurt. Jackson Merrill hurt. And so the lineup is it's just Fernando trying to do hero ball. It's like rookie LeBron, except it's a different kind of sport. And when you have Cronenworth and Merrill in the lineup, and they're not going to be out for too long. When you have those guys in the lineup, it makes it so those other fill-in type pieces don't need to do as much, right? And so when Jason Hayward goes 1-for-4 with a double, you're like, nice, good. That, we'll take that, right? But when those guys are hurt, you will not take that. And that, to me, is kind of the biggest difference here. Padres pitching, though, looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. And the top of this rotation, I mean, Pivetta has been, I was super high on Pivetta, regardless of where he signed. He has been unbelievable. I mean, he's in, you know, Cy Young consideration at this point. King and Cease continue to be awesome. Randy Vasquez, like, there's no way they want to keep him in the rotation. They just, without Darvish, without Musgrove, and they still have some other injuries to where they're still rolling him out there. But I can't imagine they're going to keep letting him go, because it has just been walk fest. I mean, he allowed a home run to Taylor Walls, which, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty much grounds for automatic demotion. So
immediate ejection.
Yeah.
Can you imagine you surrender a homer to Tyler Walls you can't hit? And Gump's like,
you're gone.
You're gone.
The bullpen is great. But yeah, and Arise also is missing right now, just because I think he's still under a concussion protocol. So we saw the depth, and at the time, like as you mentioned, right? Like when you have everybody, all the good players healthy, whatever you're getting from Iglesias and you know, Yuli Gurriel, Mason McCoy, Connor Joe, like these, Oscar Gonzalez. Cute. It's just like
it goes from cute to not fun.
But if anything, what this is really highlighting too is like, as much as it's like, oh, look at all these, you know, quad A players or players way past being regular major leaguers, and oh wow, they're failing. It also highlights Manny Machado and Xander Bogaerts, you know, on contracts worth $500 million. Like, if just being okay is not good enough, if the rest of your lineup looks like this. So again, I still think the Padres are one of the best teams in baseball, because I think their ceiling is that good, and if everybody is healthy and clicking, like, and Jackson Merrill is one of the best players in baseball, like this team should still win a lot of games. But this is what is going to happen here. And it's exactly the fear. And you hope that those guys can get healthy soon so they can start looking good again.
The Padres' energy right now is sweep a wild card round and get swept at an NLDS. That is like the vibe of this operation at the moment. Just quickly on the Rays, their rotation, which has struggled at home in the tiny little baby ballpark that is copycat Yankee Stadium. Turns out when you go to Petco Park and there's more room for those deep fly balls, you can allow fewer runs. Yeah. So maybe they should have just played their whole season there.
Well, and it is interesting because the splits right now are not as extreme if you just look at road home ERA, but they've also barely played any road games. And mm-hmm. we've talked about this, like, how will this road heavy schedule in the second half hurt or help them? This is maybe something to monitor. But we do generally like the talent on the mound, and if they can get just enough contributions from some of the new position players that were not factors last year, like I said, I think they're going to hang around. They got a plus 14 run differential, even at 500 here. They've won five in a row. So Rays are feeling good. That was a pretty impressive result.
Let's go through the next two sweeps pretty quickly. The Twins over the Angels and the Reds over the Rockies. Both instances of a team that is probably okay, mollywhopping a catastrophe into the ground. Yes. The Angels, this is an amazing tweet from Sam Blum, friend of the show, athletic writer for the Angels. They have a strikeout to walk ratio over the last 15 games that's basically like incomprehensibly bad. They're striking out 32% of the time and walking 3.8% of the time. That is twice the K to walk as the second worst team.
Ugh.
Okay. I mean, like they're at 8.6 and the second worst team is at 4.29. Their current through 27 games, their first 27 games, it is the worst strikeout to walk ratio in MLB history through 27 games. And if they keep this number up, it will be the worst of all time. That is not the totality of the Angels' problem, nor is it even the totality of their offense. But it is hard to have success when you are striking out that much and walking that little.
And unfortunately, like, that's kind of the team they built, right? I mean, sure, Mike Trout's got nine homers. He's striking out a lot, not walking. Like, Jorge Soler, surprise, surprise. Joe Adell, surprise, surprise. Logan Ohapi, you know, he's got some pop, but, like, this is going to happen. Kyron Paris, bless his heart, the dude's won for his last 30 with 17 strikeouts. Like, that was, again, we knew regression was coming, but this has been about as harsh as you can imagine. Zach Neto has yet to draw a walk since he came back. So as Sam pointed out in his tweets, like, it's one thing for a team to have a slump offensively, like, that's baseball. This is process disaster, oriented, right? This is 100%. Just like, you are not even giving your team, yourself, a chance to succeed because you're not even putting the ball in play, or you're not taking your base. And so that's why they score whatever, six runs this weekend and get swept in Minnesota.
The Twins right now remind me of when I went to physical therapy. And when you get surgery for something, you start small and you have these benchmarks. So it's like, oh, you got elbow surgery. First, let's see if you can take your arm and put it straight. Then we'll have you like pick up a bowl of rice, and then you can, you know, do an arm circle, and then you can throw a weighted ball. For the Twins, sweeping the Angels is step one, right?
Well, like, they beat the White Sox in a series before that.
Okay,
right?
So they beat the White Sox in a series. That was like using a walker. Now they're using a cane, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Let's get them. They got four in Cleveland this week.
Yes.
If they can take three of those, we maybe can deem them healthy return to baseball activities.
I will see the Twins a bunch over the next week because I'm going to Boston this weekend, and I will see them in Cleveland. So let's talk in a week and we'll see if the Twins can kind of revive their season. Their record is obviously still pretty bad. One more sweep, the Reds over the Rockies. Oh. The Rockies continue. This is already the fifth time the Rockies have been swept this season.
Let's cut to the chase. Rockies are 4-23. They are, I'm going to say it one more time for emphasis, 4-23. That is a 24 win pace over a 162 game season. They could be the worst team of all time. Last year, we saw the worst team of all time. And I understand that it is maybe sensationalist to say it could happen again right away. If you disagree with that, you have not watched the Rockies play. I watched their whole game yesterday, start to finish. I said Sunday afternoon, this is a real thing. I had a lot of cooking to do yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Made some black-eyed peas, made some pasta, made a bunch of couscous, did some meal prep, you know. And I had the Rocks Reds on the whole time on the Rocks broadcast. Okay. And then I watched the whole post-game show because I just wanted to see how this was being communicated.
Yeah.
The Rockies, they stink.
Yeah. Yeah, they sure do.
Big. They stink big.
The Reds in 2022 started 3-22. The White Sox last year, I believe, started 3-22 or close. But now here we are at 4-23 with no sign of slowing down. And it's also a perfect storm, right? We've talked about the division that they're playing in might be one of the best we've seen in recent baseball history, and how many division wins could they possibly have? But there are going to be a lot of parts of this Rockies futility that we are going to be monitoring. And I think that the main thing that's so frustrating with them is that there are players on the team that I like. This is not a White Sox team where the talent is completely, it's just bereft. It's just like there is nothing here of major league quality. There are some decent players on the Rockies, and it just doesn't matter. They are getting as little out of their talent as possible, and that is why they're going to lose so many games. And yes, there are certainly people listening being like, you dummies took the over.
That was
and
a
you're
miss.
Right. You're right. I take that back pretty strongly.
They stink, dude.
Yeah. As for the Reds, again, we did this last week, whatever. They swept the Pirates. We're like, who cares? I mean, the Reds have a decent record and a good run differential, and their pitching's been very good. Their offense is slowly heating up. Austin Hayes looks great. Gavin Lux is quietly hitting over 300. There's still parts of this offense that I just do not like at all. The pitching, Lodolo, Hunter Green is pretty awesome. And we got Chase Burns is going to come up at some point in the next couple of months too, right? Like, there's some good things happening with Cincinnati. Four games at home this week against the Cardinals. Go win that series, and then we can have a conversation about whether you are a real, viable, relevant team for the rest of the season. But that is all we have to say about the sweeps. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we're going to go around the league talking about the other series that stood out to us. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. We did the sweeps. Now we'll talk about the guy who hit four home runs in a game. Eugenio Suarez. Not one. Not two. Not three. Not four. Not five. Actually, no, four. Goes yard four times against the Atlanta Braves on Saturday in a loss. In a loss. You know, the Diamondbacks lost again. The Braves took this series, winning the first two. Diamondbacks salvaging on Sunday because Corbin Carroll hit two triples. What a beast. But we're going to zoom in on Gino because it is the first time since 2017 that a player went deep four times in a game. That last player, also a Diamondback, JD Martinez, who, by the way, not retired, not on a team.
I know.
Just still out there.
Yeah.
Kicking it.
Strange.
Free agents ranked. He's number one on my free agent board right now.
You know? Is he above David Robertson? I don't know, man. I see some bullpens that could certainly use David Robertson. I'm not sure what he's up
That's
to.
True.
But yes, JD Martinez still a free agent. I saw him posting about this feat from Gino, which is very cool. I again, with all due respect to JD Martinez, because I certainly remember that one, I do wish that one had come before the Scooter Gennett four home run game, which was also that season. And also that one, of course, really stands out because that one is more epitomizes the juiced ball that season. And it was like, oh, wait, who hit four homers in a game? But anyway, four homers in a game is unbelievable. It is more rare than a perfect game, which is probably the most basic selling point. This is only the 19th time in baseball history that this has happened, Major League Baseball history. Only the third time that it has happened in a loss, joining Ed Delahanty in 1896 and Bob Horner
Legend.
In 1986, which is a pretty fun fact. Not as fun for Gino, of course, who I'm sure would have liked to be celebrating these four home runs in a victory. But if you like, this is, if we were drafting, I know I picked Ben Rice for homer game as a, as my bold prediction, but truly, if we were like predicting who's going to hit four home runs, Gino would absolutely be one of my first picks. Like, this is what he does. When he's getting locked in, he's hit the ball over the fence and nothing else.
You can't bring up Ed Delahanty, Jordan, without briefly mentioning how he lost his life.
Oh, I mean, come on now. We're celebrating Big Ed Delahanty right now. We didn't have to go all the way back to his final days. But yeah, it's...
Go look it up, everybody. Go look it up.
Anyway, Ed Delahanty, Bob Horner, Eugenio Suarez, four homers in an L. Suarez has 20 hits this year. 10 of them are home runs, which is great. 10 is tied for the MLB lead with Cal Raleigh. But other than that, I mean, this is still a pretty nice little series win for Atlanta. The thing about that Suarez four-homer game is that the fourth one came against Raisel Iglesias, who has continued to stink. And I don't, again, Braves are playing much better, but this is like a pretty, again, all relievers are capable of turning into a pumpkin at any moment. I guess we have to accept that. We'll have more closer talk here in a little bit about Devin Williams and Emmanuel Clase. But Iglesias was, there did not appear to be anything fluky about what he did a year ago. And now nothing is working whatsoever. And he is just getting pummeled. He has already allowed more homers this year than he did last year, which is five. And I don't know. I mean, it's not like there's an obvious guy with the Braves where it's like, okay, he's there's no Luke Weaver or Cade Smith where it's like, okay, we'll just go to him instead of Raisel Iglesias. So I imagine Snit is going to stick with him for basically as long as reasonably possible. As good as Daisbell Hernandez looks, like, I imagine it's still going to be Iglesias. But that is definitely a Braves subplot I'm intrigued by.
Dodgers take 2 out of 3 over the Pirates and look bad for much of it. Well, not necessarily bad, but it's another Dodgers series win where you're like, was that a good weekend? On Friday, Paul Skeens shoves up against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Trademark start. Like, we'll watch that one back. And in 25 years, when he gets elected into the Hall of Fame, I think there will be footage from this start. It was just the curveball he threw to get Ohtani the third time through the order. Breaking ball, like, getting him to swing on top of that. Like, that's the good stuff. Pirates do just enough on offense. That night, they don't the rest of the series. I love that Andy Pages is Skeens' kryptonite. I believe he is 4 for 4 against Skeens with a homer and two doubles.
Oh, I did not realize that, although that is also just a continuation. He did go 3 for 3 on Friday. Pages has been the Dodgers' best hitter for the last like 3 weeks. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not really sure, because it's like they have so many other hitters that should be playing better than Andy Pages. And yet, if Andy Pages is doing this bad in 8th or 9th, like, you're obviously in pretty good shape. Pages' underlying stuff does not look like someone who is playing this well whatsoever, but he knows how to get the ball in the air. He's made some nice play. He's robbed, I think, 3 homers while Roky Sasaki is pitching. So I'm sure Roky has certainly appreciated his defense in center field. And yeah, he's already kind of, I mean, whatever. We saw stretches of this last year, but this is obviously the best that he has looked in at any point in his young big league career. So we'll see if he can kind of keep it up. Because like I said, like, it doesn't really seem like he's suddenly that much better of a player if you look at the hard hit rate and the, you know, the chase rate stuff. But good for him. He's on a hell of a run here.
4 for 4 with 2 doubles, a homer, and a walk against Skeens, which is just awesome.
So Roky Sasaki starts on Saturday again. Just we're still learning more. The good news is that he's going deeper into games. He is throwing more strikes. Like, the command is not just like totally wayward, but the fastball is not good. It's just not a good pitch. He is getting no whiffs on it whatsoever. He's not throwing it hard enough to where he can just blow it past guys. 96 is not fast enough to just live in the zone in the big leagues, especially when it doesn't have plus life and your command isn't very good. The splitter is still one of the best pitchers in the world. And so that continues to bail him out of a lot of situations, which, credit to him, he has this super pitch that he can always lean. And the slider has looked decent, which is better than maybe we expected at this point. But I just, again, like, credit to him. He is managing to pitch deep enough in his arts. The command is not that bad. He threw 93 pitches, a season high. I just don't really know
yeah,
what, how this fastball gets fixed right now, what the tweak is to make it more effective, because right now it's just not a bad pitch. It's not just not good enough. It's a bad pitch.
I trust the Dodgers people to figure that out as much as I trust anybody. The conversation about this reminds me actually of Paul Skenes. So when Skenes was in the mix to go number one overall, which he eventually did, there was conversation about his fastball shape and that the way his fastball played could be a potential Achilles heel for him at the big league level. It worked in college at LSU. A lot works in college at LSU that doesn't work in the big leagues. Now, it has turned out that Paul Skenes is just fine. Part of that is because the fastball is living at 98 and not 96. 99.
Yeah. That 99 does make a difference. Yeah.
Makes a huge difference. Part of it is because his command of that pitch is light years beyond what Roki is at right now. And then part of it is because of the other elements of Skenes' profile, whether that's the release point or the extension on it or how it goes with the rest of his pitch mix. It's playing better than I think skeptics thought it would. But that conversation is basically what is happening with Roki, where when we talked about Skenes as a prospect, it was like, how does this not work? Okay, well, it doesn't work if the fastball shape sinks the whole profile. With Roki right now, that is easily the number one concern. Now, against a bad Pirates offense, it'll play, right?
Sort of.
I don't...
well enough to pitch it to the sixth, yes.
Sort of. Figuring out how to overcome this problem is a fascinating puzzle for Roki and the Dodgers people to solve. And because his talent, the arm talent, his coordination, his ability, his athleticism, all that stuff, because that remains intact, there's so much to work with here that I have faith they'll get it, they'll figure it out. Yep. If Roki was on the Rockies, if he was Rocky Sasaki, I would be like, I'd be like, he's cooked.
Like, he has no chance to ever figure
no
this
chance.
Out.
No chance.
Yeah.
Correct.
I totally hear that. And I think now as we zoom out to the other big takeaway from this Dodgers series, the reason why this is so compelling is Sasaki's importance is only going to grow as Dodgers pitchers that are not named Sasaki keep getting hurt. Whether or not this means that he's going to need to start in the postseason or not, right now, the Dodgers, who now lose another starter in Tyler Glasnow, who leaves his start early with a shoulder issue, when Snell is already dealing with shoulder issues and does not appear close to coming back, it doesn't sound like Otani's anywhere close to coming back. They're not going to rush him back. Kershaw is still rehabbing. They have all these other guys that they could shuffle up from AAA. Maybe they stretch out Ben Kasperius. We see Bobby Miller, Robleski, Landon Knack. You know, maybe we see Nick Frasso finally. They just claimed Andrews Gomez. Dustin May has at least been pitching, making his turn through the rotation. I know he's been a little bit shaky recently. And Yamamoto has mostly been awesome. But like every time another guy goes down, every Sasaki start just has more importance because it's not like, oh, well, whatever. He's the sixth starter. I know technically he's, you know, starting every day on Saturday, but it's like he can ease in. Now it becomes more important for him to figure it out. As for Glasnow, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, it's just bleak because like he basically admitted like he thinks this is a result of having altered his delivery slightly to try and avoid elbow issues, which he finished last year with. He was so focused on making sure his elbow stayed healthy that he was maybe compensating and changing things about his delivery to where he now basically admitted after the game yesterday that, yeah, that might have contributed to my shoulder not feeling as good. And it just sucks. I mean, it's not that surprising for someone who is that big and throws that hard and has had these issues his whole career. But it's just a reminder of the fragility, not just of all pitchers, but of the pitchers that the Dodgers in particular have kind of signed up for. And that's what really is putting them in, once again, quite a bind as we move forward. They are likely still going to win a bunch of games, but these are the things that kind of chips away at their ceiling, let alone at their floor.
Since 2016, this is a bleak. What's the opposite of a fun fact? Sad?
Is
sad
this Glasnow?
Nugget? Yeah.
Okay.
Since he debuted in 2016, he has thrown fewer innings than Anibal Sanchez. who has not
pitched in what pitched. 4 years.
You
could probably find a few of those. Anyway, so
he's behind Steven Strasburg.
Well,
he's behind Vince Velasquez.
Still in AAA with Cleveland.
Still in AAA. He's behind Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't play that often.
Yeah.
This stuff is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a bummer that he's not on the mound more. But the Dodgers relying on this guy.
I mean, you can't, whatever, you can't. It's not,
you can't.
You simply cannot. We said that when they traded for and extended him, we wanted it to be true. He did for the first 3 months last year, looked like he was proving us wrong, and then finished the year with elbow issues. And now here we are with shoulder problems. And he's had a lot of other, you know, injuries along the way. So that sucks because I like watching Glasnow and I like Glasnow as a dude. So we'll see where that leads. I don't know if this means he's done for the season. We're not going to speculate at this point. If we have an update on that, we will cover it. One of the only thing I will mention on this series before we move on to the two other ones is O'Neill Cruz is doing it. He's doing the thing.
O'Neill.
This is what, yes, I mean, not that complicated. He's one of the most talented players on the planet, and we are starting to see that manifest on a consistent day-to-day basis to where I expect him to be an all-star this year with Paul Skeens. It will not, the Pirates, as embarrassing as they are, I think they will have two all-stars.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Tommy Pham. All right, Yankees taking 2 out of 3 over the Blue Jays, sweeping the doubleheader on Sunday. The rain out on Saturday was very bizarre. I went to the yard. It was not raining. They canceled the game literally like as I showed up. It barely rained. It rained for like 25 minutes and it was just like decent out.
Seemed like an overcorrection to what happened against the Giants.
Yeah, it poured at like 6:30.
Okay.
But it was a 1 o'clock game.
I see.
So it's 2025 now. We would have gotten it in. Anyway, they played 2 on Sunday. The Yankees won both. I want to have a longer Aaron Judge conversation on Wednesday and really spend some time celebrating him because what a freak, what a gift, what a thing. The notable thing from this series, Devin Williams removed from the closer role after blowing game 1. His ERA is supersonic through a month with the Yankees. And Luke Weaver will be the closer moving forward. Williams was like, yeah, like I am not good right now. And this is what's best for the team. Handled it fine. Makes sense to put Weaver in that role and let Williams figure it out in lower leverage. But I think this gets lost sometimes, specifically with bullpen stuff, where, and Aaron Boone has said this, the best version of the Yankees that wins the World Series probably needs Devin Williams to be an important part of the story, right? And so the priority is you're balancing these two things. You're balancing winning baseball games now, today, with making sure that this piece figures stuff out. And letting him wear it in the closer role is no longer going to be the best way for him to figure it out. Now, there are some guys for who that is the case, right? Where the track record or the results or the batted ball luck is at a place where it's like, that's where he's going to figure it out. It might hurt us in the short run. It's worth it. That's not the case with Williams anymore. And so they're now going to try and revive and refurbish him and renovate the whole vibe because he just doesn't seem right. But it's true. They need this guy. They need this guy.
Yeah, and I think it's the combination of Luke Weaver looks amazing, you have a ready-made alternative, and the way that Devin Williams has been bad has been in a way, we kind of talked about that with the Angels, like from a process standpoint. This is not some bad luck. The guy is not doing anything well. He's not getting strikeouts. Even when he would be shaky with Milwaukee and would walk a bunch of guys, like, yeah, he's walk prone. Like, Devin Williams will walk a dude. That's always been true. You know, it's another comparison to someone like Edwin Diaz, who has been especially wild this season, and yet he's been perfect in his save opportunities, and he's racking up a ton of strikeouts. You can live with that. But when Devin Williams has 8 strikeouts in 8 innings, that's not good enough for him based on the standards that he has set, while also still walking guys and, you know, hitting guys and allowing more hits than he really ever has. So it looks wrong. Something looks like it is wrong. And so that is why they're going to kind of take a step back there and see if they can get him right. And yes, like that's how it is slightly different than someone like Clay Holmes last year, where, you know, a lot of his struggles were, well, you know, Clay Holmes is going to be putting the ball in play because he's a sinker baller, and sometimes those balls are going to get through. Now, he also had some issues with control where you could say, hey, what are we doing? Like, we can't just have him go out there and walk a bunch of guys. But I think Williams has looked so much worse at this point than what you expect from him that you probably do have to make a change there.
One more series, and then we'll take a break. Red Sox taking 2 out of 3 over the Guardians.
Yes.
You were at some of these?
Yes. So two main things from this series. The first is, let's just talk about this quickly. Obviously, one of the bigger... I was there on... It was a messy weekend because it got rained out on Friday and then split doubleheader on Saturday, which was just a long, unpleasant day. Guardians won the first game on Saturday, lost the second game on Saturday. But then on Sunday, this series unfortunately got a spotlight on it because of what happened between Jaren Duran and a fan, where a fan shouted things related to Jaren Duran's recently revealed suicide attempt, which is obviously horrific. Don't need to spend too much time explaining why that is an incredibly horrible behavior. And it sounds like the Guardians and the fans around them and security and the umpires handled it about as well as they possibly could have. And that's what Duran said after the game. And so I'm glad they handled that, as they said. I would also just say it was disappointing that we ended up talking a lot about that, not just because it's a horrible thing that happened, but also because Jaren Duran stole home on Saturday and I was there. That's the first time I've ever seen home stolen, just a straight steal of home. I don't know if you've ever seen that in person, but it is, of course, one of the coolest things you can do in sports and a reminder of the kind of player that Jaren Duran is. And if they can get him going, like, this offense will absolutely start cooking the way that it should. Devers had a couple homers over the weekend. But the other big takeaway from this series is just, again, we've just been talking about some of these closers, just weird stuff with Emmanuel Clase. So basically, a week ago, he threw 30 pitches against Pittsburgh, looked really bad. After that, Stephen Vogt doubled down and said, he's still the closer. He's the best closer in the world. We're not worried about him. The next day, but then he was down a couple days because he had thrown all those pitches. Then Stephen Vogt revealed that Clase said his shoulder hurt after that outing. And it was like, oh, okay, well, that's concerning because Emmanuel Clase has never been injured. He has never been on the IL in the big leagues. And so you're like, oh, okay, Clase shoulder, like, that's concerning. Cade Smith saves a couple games during the week, and you're like, okay, all right, Clase's not going to pitch, whatever. By the end of the week, it seems like, okay, Clase's fine. He's not going on the IL, whatever. Then in the first game on Saturday, very textbook close Guardians win, and you assume, okay, if Clase's healthy, he's going to come in and save this game. Instead, he comes in the eighth, records his first hold since 2021. Cade Smith gets the save. Afterwards, it's like, is Clase still the closer? And Vogt basically said, yes, he's still the closer. We're easing him back in after his little injury scare, and he hadn't pitched in 5 days. To which I was like, okay, it's not like he hasn't pitched in like 3 months. Like, this is not... We were all just like, all right, sure. Like, they said it was a predetermined plan. They told Clase, we're going to use you in the seventh or the eighth. Again, it was a one-run game. It's not like they used him in mop-up work. It's not like, okay, he's in. And then they didn't have a safe situation the next 2 days because they got crushed. So I don't know what's going on here. I mean, Clase said after the game, like, I told them my shoulder was hurting in Arizona, but I pitched through it and it was fine. And then after the Pittsburgh game, I said I had to speak up because it felt like it was an issue. Now I feel good. So I don't know, man. I don't know where this is going. I don't know if Clase is actually hurt. I hope he's not. Does that make me feel better or worse than if he's just suddenly bad? You know, it's one of those situations where it's like when a player who's this good is suddenly sucking. Would you feel better if you knew that he was actually injured? Because that would not just, you know, break your conception of what you think this player is. They have Cade Smith, who's awesome. In theory, they could make the move, but I do think they're going to keep stick with... I still mostly believe, as weird as they've handled it, I mostly believe that Clase will remain the closer moving forward. But it is definitely something to monitor. And certainly from a health standpoint, I hope he's okay. So anyway, weird stuff in Cleveland.
You're the closer. Not. Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll throw everything into turbo mode. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbacast. We still have 75 series to talk about, so let's throw it into freaking turbo mode. All right. Phillies over Cubs. Cubs win the first one. Phillies battle back. Take the next two. Ugly Sunday night baseball game with a lot of weak rollovers to the second base. Aaron Nola, though, looked sensational. So did Jameson Taillon. But that was very important for the Phillies to get a good Nola start because he looked pretty cooked for much of the early going. The big news nugget out of this one is that Bryce Harper told The Athletic, Patrick Mooney, that, quote, going into the offseason when he was a free agent, the Cubs were the number one team on his list, and they never called.
Yeah, and we've also heard reports that, like, we know he met with the White Sox and was clearly, like, interested in Chicago. And that does not surprise me at all that Bryce Harper at that stage was, like, looking at Chicago as, like, I could go be part of Chicago. And apparently they were like, Bryce Harper, generational player? Nah. Speaking of Bryce Harper earlier in his career, the Washington Nationals. Take the two of three against the Mets over the weekend. They play again on Monday in the fourth game of a four-game series. The Nats win on Friday and Sunday in fairly ridiculous fashion. Mets kind of cruise on Saturday. These were some ugly wins for the New York Mets. And, you know, it wasn't Edwin
losses.
Diaz. Yeah,
losses.
They're sorry. These were some very ugly losses for the New York Mets. The mean reversion that Steve Cohen referred to has already arrived, but credit to the Nats for scrapping there. They're kind of fun to watch.
Royals take two out of three over the Astros, shutting Houston out on Friday and on Saturday. I'm starting to get a little bit worried about this Houston offense. They did break out in a big Sunday win against Chris Bubich. Hunter Brown was great. My AL Cy Young pick looking delightfully good in the early going. Fun, weird thing for this one is Framber Valdez with the 8-inning complete game loss, which is one of my favorite things when you are on the road and your team does not score in the top of the ninth. And so there is no need to play the bottom and you get a complete game. You threw 8 innings. You completed the game. So it counts.
As a loser. Sorry, Framber. We still love you. Cardinals take 2-3 over the Brewers. Cardinals win a close one on Friday. And then Arenado hits a walk-off homer on Saturday after Jackson Churio had tied it with a homer in the top of the ninth off of Ryan Helsley. And then on Sunday, though, the Brewers managed to squeak out a win as Jose Quintana becomes the first Brewers starter to win his first four starts with the team since ZZ Sabathia in 2008.
You know, Jose Quintana won again.
You can't stop this guy.
Mariners taking 2-3 over the Marlins. This was a weird series with a lot of runs. Logan Gilbert gets hurt on Friday. That could potentially be a big deal. The Mariners end up losing that one. Augustin Ramirez, the main piece of the Marlins got back in the Jazz Chisholm trade, has been en fuego since his call up.
Yeah.
He has 3 home runs.
Super fun. Again, the Marlins hopefully will become more watchable as the season comes on, but Augustin Ramirez is very fun. As for the Mariners, Cal Raleigh's up to 10 homers, and their offense has been, like, pretty good, which is important if their pitchers are going to start getting hurt for the first time ever, and the bullpen, besides Andrés Muñoz, who is elite, continues to be shaky. Logan Evans wins in his major league debut. Giants take 2-3 over the Rangers. Nate Eovaldi dominates on Friday. Rangers win 2-0, and boy, was it embarrassing for Texas after that. Robbie Ray, who was awesome, outduels Tyler Mahle on Saturday. The Giants walk off in normal fashion on Saturday, and then in the least normal fashion imaginable on Sunday.
A little doinker in front of the mound in the bottom of the ninth, tie game from Elliot Ramos. And Ranger on the first pitch, Rangers closer Luke Jackson picks up that baseball, yeets it down the right field line. Ramos runs to second. All the ball is picked up by first baseman Jake Berger. He hucks it to third, and that'll get away. And a Little League walk-off home run from Elliot Ramos that produced the current contender for quote of the year. I would like to see if anything can top this. Let's keep it in mind. If anybody sees good quotes, please email us, baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. But Luke Jackson, this is via @SusanSlusser, called the final play of this game, quote, quite literally, Lemony Snicket's series of unfortunate events. Shouting out Lemony Snicket after you make a game-losing error is perfect. It's great. Like, good job. Humor, a recognition of a unique baseball event, 10 out of 10. We'll see if it can hold the top spot. Last series is A's over the White Sox. Very cool.
This did happen. All right. This was a baseball series that happened.
It occurred.
Luis Urias walk-off homer on Sunday. He's been pretty good. Zach Gelof is hurt, and Luis Urias is maybe taking his job.
Now, before we get out of here, we had a long conversation last week about what a six-game sweep in the minor leagues should be called. We call a four-gamer a mop, a three-gamer a sweep. I'm pretty committed to two gamers as a dusting. However, cool, we did get an email that it should be called a wipe, which I don't hate, but it is a little restroom coded.
Yeah, that's and true. So, but I do like that where it's just like you're kind of like if you're wiping a surface, you know, it's just like, oh, you know, you got little bit of stuff on the counter. Let me just wipe that off. That's too good.
So we want this to be a community-oriented experience. If you like wipe versus dusting, email us at baseballbarbercast.com, at gmail.com, not .com. Here are our suggestions that we received for six-game sweeps, okay? There's a lot. Some are good. Some are also in our email inbox. Please keep sending them. And once we read these out, we would love to have something of a consensus so we can decide as a group moving forward. Here's what we got. A plow.
Plowed them. Plowed probably em. Not. That's from Steven.
A little sexual. Squeaky clean sweep.
Again.
Good effort.
It does sound one word. Cool, but we want to keep it shorter.
One word. Vacuum.
A vacuum strong contender. Whether vacuum is above or below mop is what makes this tough. But Mark is good
so
suggestion.
That is my biggest issue is that I can't remember the last time I mopped my apartment. I vacuum every couple days.
Fair enough.
You know, I sweep less than I vacuum. I sweep more than I vacuum, right? I sweep more than I vacuum, but way less than I mop. More
so
than
yeah,
I
mop. My vacuum is you probably not point. Above mop then, yeah.
Okay. Sterilize.
So we got sterilize from Amanda, sanitize from Jonah and Tilly. These are kind of along the same. We also have detox from Adam. Now we're getting into more of the like aggressively.
Yeah.
We're thinking about the germs, right? We're thinking.
Yes. So sterilize, other connotations.
Yeah,
that's
probably,
a no.
Probably not.
Sanitize, interested.
Interested.
Don't hate that one. A scouring.
This is from Edwin in Ireland. Scouring again. I'm not sure I associate that with cleaning, but
they scoured them.
Getting at
scouring for me is more like a search.
Yes, right. I agree.
You know, shop vac.
This is funny. Again, still more along the vacuuming side of things. So I don't think this quite works.
My issue with shop vac also is that it is a company.
Yeah.
It's like a Kleenex tissue situation. Yeah. And I don't want to give free advertising. Yeah. A bleaching.
I think bleached them is pretty good. I think
pretty good.
That's maybe the leader for me. That's from Ben.
Bleached them. Zamboni. Just like fully clean the ice.
But the thing about Zamboni, as great as it is, are they used in any other... You can't context. Just break out the Zamboni in the living room.
I get Zamboni in my apartment. Detoxed.
Detoxed is compelling. Again, I still would prefer one syllable. And that's kind of why bleach
yes,
is strong.
I understand that. And that's why I love scrubbed from Stewart. Because if you're mopping, when you mop, you're not applying pressure.
The mop is doing the work.
Dirt particles.
Yeah.
Scrubbing, there's elbow grease involved. And for a six-game sweep, you're going to need some elbow grease. However, my favorite in the clubhouse is fumigation. I know it's long, but so is a six-game sweep. Okay? We fumigated them. It does not roll off the tongue at all.
The trash but pandas...
Fumigate.
The trash pandas have fumigated the lookouts in a crucial second half Southern League series.
No, I like it in a different context. This is
This,
they're going for the fumigation.
Christian Moore's first double since the trash band has fumigated him a couple weeks ago.
These are pretty solid. Wow. I'm more...
Okay, very quickly. Very quickly. This is bonkers. Remember last week I said that as we were talking about the Mets attendance, my Aunt Jennifer was like, hey,
yeah,
I'm going to be at the game.
I'm going to the Mets.
Literally... Yeah. She literally texted me right now, scrub, in all caps.
Is she not just calling you a scrub?
Could be.
Okay.
Could be.
Speaking. So anyway, I'm partial to bleach, but let us know. Speaking of feedback, another thing we discussed on Friday was fandom. We got a very thoughtful email about, oh, how do we navigate being baseball fans now that we work in baseball, and how does it mean the teams that we were cheering for when we were, you know, in high school, how does that impact us now? And we kind of talked about how it would be cool if we picked a team not in baseball that we could root for together, which is not something we've really ever had the experience of. We've never done that. Or it's never happened to be the case, and we've never gone out of our way to do that. And at the end of that conversation, we were kind of saying, like, hockey is a sport that is a really, really good candidate for this because of how relatively little we know. So how green we are to the sport, that like, we don't have any really preconceived notions about this in the way that like, we don't want to watch football. And like the NBA, we still watch casually enough to where it's like that we have other connections. So anyway, and by the way, I should mention, we got an email from Laura asking if we are considering women's sports teams. Yes, absolutely. Like
she recommended the Washington Spirit. I am moving to DC. My wife's cousin, who is a very good friend of ours, is a season ticket holder and a diehard Spirit fan, and I am planning on going to many games. So that is on my list.
Listen, that's a good candidate. I'm as a big softball fan, volleyball fan. I follow pro volleyball. I've been into that. Went to a Columbus Fury game earlier this year. WNBA, I certainly watched a lot more of. So I'm into that. But we're going to keep the focus of this conversation on hockey, because we do want to, we have given this a little bit more thought. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And so literally within probably 30 seconds after we finished recording on Friday, we went ham trying to figure this out. And after, I mean, just some quick research, we have come close to a consensus on who we would like to support. Now, before we reveal who that is, we would like to thank everybody for sending your emails about which team to support.
So good.
We got a lot of great emails, some great pitches. Matt made a pitch for the Caps. Of course, you moving back to DC, get into the Caps. And you've already talked about that. Like, oh, maybe I'll start getting into the Caps. That's fine.
We grew up watching Peter Bondra.
Of course. You know? Of course. Shout out Jeff Halpern. We're all in those. Okay. John sent an email. He gave us some great details. Like, I learned a lot in these emails. This is great. John gave some pitches for the Stars, the Winnipeg Jets, the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, I've considered as an Ohio resident. The new team in Utah, the Islanders, I know, are a very hilarious operation.
My dad's team.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Your dad's team. Daniel suggested, you should go to a game in October when you're, you know, on the road the postseason, and then maybe make something happen. Probably not, Daniel.
Don't have time for
unrealistic.
That.
Not going to happen. But I do. I would say, listen, it is a good idea to try and go see a game. I'm sure that could go. Okay, that's fine. Joe and Ty suggested the Hurricanes. Okay, Carolina Hurricanes. Brighton suggested the Ottawa Senators. I liked him pointing out that, like, that's their team. That's Ottawa's team. Now, I don't have any connection to Ottawa, but I was like, all right, cool. This is a good one. The most compelling pitch we got, I would say, it was from Jeremy.
Nailed it.
Jeremy sent a very, very great email. This is his first email. All about the Vancouver Canucks. Okay. And it was a great email. And there was a lot of really good points about it. However, within Jeremy's email, he included this line. So he said, as for an NHL team, you should be fine. I advocate for the Vancouver Canucks. And then he says, aside from the Buffalo Sabres, there is bar none, no other fan base which has had as much consternation as the Canucks. And Jeremy,
well, guess what?
Bad
we
news.
Want to be consternated, baby. The Baseball Barbercast podcast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman, would like to officially announce for the first time in public our diehard lifelong fandom of the Buffalo MFN Sabres. Go Burrs.
Yes. Unfortunately, Jeremy, after you, but by the time you had sent this email, we were already knee deep.
Rink deep.
Waist to shoulder, elbow. We were all the way in on learning about the embarrassing history of these Buffalo Sabres.
All who, in, dude.
Like the Vancouver Canucks, I understand they both joined the NHL the same year and neither of them have ever won the Stanley Cup, which is why they are both very strong contenders here. We wanted a team that has never accomplished anything. And there were a couple of candidates, right?
Just like us.
Right. And we wanted a team where there was some weird stuff going on, but also, like, there's some hope. Dug into some hockey farm systems. And we were like, oh, they got some young talent. They were the youngest team in hockey last year.
Love that.
But then we looked into just kind of how the last, you know, decade or so has gone. They had the longest postseason drought in hockey. And we were like, oh my gosh, there's some weird stuff happening in Buffalo.
They pulled the La Russa, where they had a manager who was good in the 2000s,
like head coach.
And right. they just brought him back 10, 15 years after they had fired him. And love that. That's weird as hell.
Didn't work, by the way. Right.
Didn't work.
They were bad again this year. We were reading about just how just disaster of a season this was on many levels on the ice. A lot of problems, but with the draft lottery coming up and a date to be determined, we're hoping with some more infusion of young talent into this team with a roster full of young guns that are still learning what it takes in the National Hockey League, right?
Learning what it takes.
I think this is the team for us.
One of the biggest problems, right, is that we've had so many left-handed defensemen. And we need someone who can balance out Rasmus Dahlin and Tage Thompson, those other big defensive, or sorry, not Thompson, Owen Power. Another one of.
Yep.
So
we got to get Tage some help too. We got to get Tage some help.
Tage needs some help.
So I'm a little worried about the goalie situation. I'm a little concerned. So hopefully we can work on that in the offseason. Again, do I trust our GM?
Our GM. Kevin Adams.
Kevin Adams. Do I trust him? I don't know. But I'm going to find out.
We're going to find out.
After this offseason, we'll see how the draft shakes out.
We were talking about this off the air, and you said, yeah, I really like the roster they got. And I said to you, no, Jordan. No. You like the roster we got. Okay?
This is something... This is something that we did not talk about when we talked about our baseball fandom, is as much as our fandom has waxed and waned over the years, at no point have we ever been we guys under any circumstance. It's fine. If you are, that's fine. God bless. Not for us.
We it out.
However, now I am embracing it. This is about me and Jake and the Buffalo Sabres fans who have been suffering for so much longer than we have, which is 3 days.
Not that much longer.
Right. No, I'm kidding. And we're in. So if you're a hockey fan and you're like, you idiots, that's fine. Let us know why this is either a great pick or a bad pick. But I don't think you can change our mind at this point. I think we're already ordering minor league merch, like
hockey gear.
We're gonna get into this, okay? So I know that the hockey playoffs are going on. Oh, why don't you pick a team that's like about to go on a run? No. I want something where the payoff is going to be immaculate. I understand the city of Buffalo. They love their sports. They love their Sabres. I know they love their Bills, but we want to love the Sabres. Josh Allen sounds great. It's all about Rasmus and Owen Power and whoever they draft with the first overall pick that they're obviously going to win in the lottery. Yeah.
And I ran this pick by Pete Blackburn, who is like a more talented, hotter hockey version of what we do.
Yeah.
And he said, perfect.
He's like, hilarious. Great.
Good pick. Love
That's
this
all the validation we needed.
And that was it. I trust him. Yep. If you're a Sabres fan, it's great to be here with you.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. And if you're like, oh, you guys are frauds, you're jumping on the bandwagon. I don't know. Are people trying to become Sabres fans right now? I don't know. I feel like.
Are other people jumping on the bandwagon? Is there not room?
Is the wagon even been built? Is this like, what is the status of this
wagon?
We want
in. We love what you got.
We will build this wagon.
With you.
Together. So there you go.
Enough puck.
How this will manifest, TBD, but we're pretty committed together. Our sabers will rise from dysfunction and eventually raise the cup, and we will be emotionally invested when it happens.
They'll etch our names onto the cup next to Thompson and Darlene.
After Tage will pass the cup to Jake Mintz and Jordan Schuster, who don't know how to skate. That's it.
Just falling over with the cup because I can't skate.
Wonder how much it weighs. All right, we're done. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com. Keep those emails coming. Thank you to Colin Brennan for producing and having to produce 10 minutes of hockey chat on this Monday morning. Oh, we said we were going to talk about Shador Sanders. We're not. Sorry. We talked about hockey for 10 minutes instead. Maybe we will on Wednesday. But for now.
Not now.
We're not going to do that. Thank you all for listening. We will talk to you later this week.